Welcome back to another episode of Better Than I Found It, the podcast all things college golf. You're listening to Mike McGraw, the men's golf coach at Baylor University. Today's podcast is a little bit different. Recently, I had someone come up to me and said, what does a college golf coach really do? I mean, do you all just literally play golf with your team, get really good gear from companies, and then travel to really great destinations? That's probably all you really do, isn't it? He was almost dead serious, sort of making light of it. But then it got me to thinking, you know what? We do a lot people don't know about, especially the modern day college golf coach. So today I'm going to have my two assistant coaches, Jeremy Alcorn and Corey Donnell. We're going to all sit around and just do a little kind of round table, fireside chat, if you will, about all the different hats that a college golf coach wears and kind of how, from my perspective, how the modern day college golf coach has evolved into something a little bit different than it was 25 or 30 years ago. So I think you'll enjoy this. You might hopefully get a little edification during this process, learn a little bit about what goes on behind the scenes of a college golf program. I think you'll enjoy it. So welcome to the Better Than I Found It podcast today, the modern day college golf coach. Okay, Better Than I Found It listeners, thank you for joining me today. I've got kind of a special, different, unique podcast today, a little bit different than you guys are used to. Today I've got Jeremy Alcorn and Corey Donnell, my two assistant coaches here. Guys, say hello.
What's up, podcast listeners?
Who is that?
This is Jeremy Alcorn. Hope we can entertain y'all a little bit today.
How's it going, podcasters? This is Corey Donnell. I'm excited to kind of get some thoughts flowing. This is fun.
Yeah, this will be good. So I said it would be interesting and unusual. So I'll give a little backdrop to this, guys, and this is how I came up with this idea, and I'm glad you guys joined me today. But recently, somebody basically accused me of being an entitled coach. And I said, why? He said, well, all y'all do is get good gear, great clothes, and you get to play great golf courses every week. And I thought, well, I don't think that's really the life I'm living. And so I went to you two guys. I mean, Jeremy, is that really the life you're living? It's just all about gear and golf?
You know, I hear it a lot that that's what it is, but it's definitely not. The gear is good. The golf is not so much. I think I've got 7 or 8 rounds of golf in the past year, so not enough of it, that's for sure.
Corey?
Same here, but you think that we're surrounded by golf 24/7, that we get to play it 24/7, but I'm with you. I'm in the same boat. Might have played about that much this whole year since 2023, January.
Well, I've got you both beat. In June, I played my first round in 5 years. Now, that's my fault. I could have played more golf, no doubt about that. But I guess what I'm getting at is the reason I kind of wanted to have this podcast today is just the misconception, just the idea that the casual golf fan might think that there's nothing we do except just kind of hang out and play golf. And I do want everybody to know, yes, we do have the opportunity to play some golf, and we do get some good gear like Jeremy was talking about. But college coaching has changed. It's evolved a lot since I was playing college golf. Jeremy, you were playing golf in the mid-2000s. It's changed since you. And you're only 27, Corey, mm-hmm. But it's even different than 10 years ago when you were being recruited. So there's a lot of things that have changed. So we want to talk about that today. And I think we'll go a lot of different areas of college golf coaching and just speak to each one individually. And I think we'll just start with recruiting. Recruiting has changed a lot since I was coming through. When I was coming through, even a Power 5 conference coach might only recruit in his own state. He might just see the kids he sees at the state junior. He might get an occasional letter in the mail from somebody who lives in Northwest Washington, you know, and says, hey, I went to your school back in 74. And, you know, but the point is he wouldn't do a lot of recruiting on the road. We all recruit on the road now. So we do a lot of that. So it has changed. I personally think there's 4 distinct seasons. Jeremy, I mentioned this to you last week, and you jumped right on board. 4 distinct seasons of recruiting. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, and we talked about the 2 that, you know, have been around forever. You know, your initial evaluation of kids, and then figuring out which ones you want to actively pursue and recruit. And that hasn't changed. That still exists. But on top of that, yeah, it's you know, we've added, once you get a kid committed, you know, now it's becoming more evident. We've seen it in other sports, with football and basketball and whatnot, but holding on to that commitment, you know, there's just we're in a different day. Like, this did not exist very long ago, especially in our sport. And then, you know, that's the third. And then the fourth one would just be the transfer portal that has come about. And we'll dive a lot more into that. But, yeah, recruiting used to be simple. And it is definitely changing, and changing in a hurry.
Corey, would you agree, similar to your case, you the evaluation and the active recruiting, that's probably what you went through, right?
Yeah, absolutely. As a player, as a junior golfer, kind of went through that. I know Germ did as well, but even only been a coach for the past 2 years, I still see how those are relevant today.
Yeah, they are. So let's go back over these four real quick. Jeremy mentioned all four of them, but I'm going to kind of go evaluation. So that's been around since day one. Mm-hmm. Every coach looks at the class of whatever year it is and starts evaluating players. That's very good. You have to do it, because you have to evaluate so you can find what?
What do they have?
Yeah, what do they got?
What are we looking for, and do they have it?
Yeah, are they going to fit what we need, our needs as a university, as a golf team? So evaluation is very important. They do it in every sport, evaluation. From that evaluation, I choose as a coach to actively recruit a certain amount of guys. Mm-hmm. And in a class of 2025, currently we are actively recruiting after doing the evaluation, which I think I did most of the initial evaluation before you guys ever got on campus, mm-hmm. right? I mean, because you were both hired this summer. Isn't that correct? Corey, were you recruiting for Baylor 6 years ago?
No, I wasn't. Okay. Yeah, you were kind of head coach, assistant coach.
Yeah, let's talk about that before we go on to this. That, I forgot how hard it is to be an assistant coach. It is brutal. There's a lot to do. And we'll get to that later on. There's been so many layers added to this job. That's part of what I wanted to talk about today. And then I was asked to do them, not a hardship, but it was definitely, I had to shift gears this summer. And part of that was shifting gears and evaluating. And I didn't have somebody to bounce it off of early in the summer because you guys weren't here. Mm-hmm. You weren't hired yet. So I was doing a lot of that initial evaluation on my own. And some of it I would do on the road, and some of it, you know, by email or whatever. But evaluation is very important. It's when you decide whether or not these kids you're looking at have what you're looking for as a coach. And then you actively recruit means once June 15th rolls around and you can start talking to these guys, calling, emailing, send a letter. You can't see them in person yet other than evaluating on the road, but we actively recruited. So by the time both of you got on campus, I was already in full actively recruiting mode with a bunch of these guys, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so those are the two traditional ones that are still very much a part of what every college golf coach does. The third one you mentioned, holding on to a commitment, I never dreamed we would have to do it so actively, if you will. But once you get a kid committed, that's just part of the process. It's like you've got to hold on to that commitment because other people are actually still looking at your player. And it's like, okay, he told me, yes, I want to come to Baylor. It's what he said. So I literally still watch them at tournaments. I still send them letters. I still send them text messages every week. And I've asked you guys to do the same when you realized who our verbal commitments are in 2024. And I can't mention them because that's against the rules.
Until
November when they signed a letter of intent. Mm-hmm. So holding on to the commitment was one I never really understood. I always understood in other sports. And that would be if you go back to Jerry Tarkanian at UNLV. He was an amazing coach, coached some great teams at UNLV way back in the late 80s and the 90s. But I'll never forget this, and I couldn't understand it at the time, but I do today. A reporter asked him, he said, so Coach Tarkanian, this recruiting, I'm paraphrasing every bit of this, but he said, this recruiting is getting pretty brutal. He said, it's kind of got to be really disappointing when you evaluate a kid and you recruit him heavily and then he commits to another school. And Jerry said, that's no problem. He He said, what are you talking about? He committed to the other school. He says, oh, yeah, that's fine with me. Now at least I know who my competition is to get this kid to come to UNLV. And he said that sort of tongue-in-cheek, but it was true. And that's where we are in college golf coaching nowadays. Kids used to have a commitment, and that's where he went to school. And now it's kind of a soft commit, if you will. Mm-hmm. You guys throw it at me. See, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Tell me.
I mean, yeah. I mean, we'll see where it goes in our sport. But, you know, it seems like in a couple of those other sports, it's almost like a badge of honor that you got this kid to flip. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. You got vulnerable 17, 18, even 16-year-olds at times that are in positions that, you know, I hope that our sport doesn't go full throttle in that direction, because that's just not in the – ultimate best interest of the kid.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, golf's, it's a gentleman's sport. You call penalties on yourself. You play by the rules, and at least the rules that are set in stone, but there are also some rules you should follow, just a code.
Well, I agree. And by the way, let me be very clear. Holding on to a commitment and somebody flipping your player, that's not against the rules.
Exactly.
Correct? I mean, that's what you're referring to. It's not against the rules, but it was against our code of honor.
Code, exactly.
If you will, back in the day. We didn't, you know, if a kid committed to a school, you okay, I didn't get him. And you thank the kid, you appreciate the fact you allowed me to recruit you, and then you just move on to the next guy. And to me, when a guy does commit to another school, it hurts because you wanted the kid to come to your school, but it also clarifies things. Now he's not no longer in the mix. I've got to go over here and give my effort and energy into recruiting this other player. But apparently it's not going to be that way in our sport going forward a little bit. Maybe it's not, but you're right. It has been a trend for sure. And then the other one you mentioned, Jeremy, which is transfer portal. So the transfer portal is needed. And a lot of kids, you know, if a kid gets to a school and he's just not good enough to play there, is he going to sit around 4 years, or is he going to find a place where he could play? Maybe the coach and him agree in the portal will be great. We'll find you a better place to play. Maybe a kid has a life change, his family, or a critical thing at home, and he wants to be closer to home, to be with his mom or dad or whatever. There's reasons the transfer portal exists. But I call this TPD. Transfer portal defense. In other words, it's like, are people really going to poach off of my team through the portal? Are they really going to do that? And, you know, I thought it was just unheard of, but it's happening all the time now. Are you guys you afraid to say anything here?
No, there's different ways people do it. I think Jerm had a few good ideas about players talking to other players and kind of talking throughout the college realm.
Yeah. I mean, it's. I think it's coming. You know, as coaches get paid more and NIL money gets thrown around more, and you know, opportunities come and go more. That, you know, it's just going to keep happening more and more. And you know, some good, some bad. We'll see where we are in a few years, but there's a lot to it. It's just, I think it's something that we're having to adjust to, kind of get acclimated to, because it has become the real world of college golf. I hope that it stays in a reasonable spot, because I know some of these other sports, there's a whole lot of tampering. We're starting to see some of it. There's, you know, some of these other sports, there's a whole lot more of it. And I really hope we don't get there, but no, it's here, and there's not a whole lot we can do about it.
Well, let me be very clear. I said four distinct seasons in recruiting nowadays. The first two, evaluation and actively recruiting, that's fun, because you're gonna see if you do a good job of being smart enough to get kids you think could want to come to Baylor or your school, wherever that is. And then actively recruiting, you get to know the families, you get to know the kid really well. You know people in his life that are good. That's the fun part of recruiting. It's like, did I do a good job evaluating and then actually presenting a case where the kid thought, this is the only place I can go to school. Those two things are good. Holding on to the commitment, I don't think we should have to do it, but apparently we're going to have to. So I guess I'm okay with that one too. It's just, that'll maybe I'll do a better job of building that relationship once the kids committed to me, even built it further mm-hmm. so that there's no way they'd want to leave.
Right.
Okay. The commitment that they've made. But I understand if they do. So the first three, I can live with all three of those. The fourth one's a little bit upsetting to me because I'll give you a perfect example. You're allowed to obviously go into the portal to look to see who's available, who wants to transfer. That's legal. That's part of the rules now, the transfer portal. But if I've pushed refresh at 8 o'clock in the morning.
On a Monday.
Yeah. And at 8:05, this kid is in the portal. He's just brand new in the portal at 8:05. And his phone number's right there. And please call me, you know, basically. So I call him. And coach, I'm so sorry. I've already committed to XYZ University. Whoa. How did this happen?
What just happened?
It's like you went into the portal 5 minutes ago, and, you know, according to the rules, nobody should have been talking to you until you got into the portal. And now in 5 minutes, you've made this decision. We all know the reality of that. That didn't happen in 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you a good analogy to this, in my opinion. In golf, in the game of golf, the game we play, let's say my ball is in a certain position. And I think I should get relief. Okay? I'm always going to call for a rules official first. Why am I going to do that, Corey?
So you know you're not breaking any rules.
So no, I'm not breaking any rules. And number two?
To know where your relief is.
To know where your relief is. Very good. Both of you are correct. So I'm going to bring somebody in who's smart. And I'm also going to bring somebody in who can tell me, if you choose not to play from that spot, here are your options and there's your relief. Mm-hmm. I never pick up my ball until I know what? Where
it's going.
Where it's going. Where my relief is. Mm-hmm. If you take that analogy and put it into recruiting, at 8:05, I could not have done enough work to know where my relief is, mm-hmm. to know where I could land. That's just not possible. It's not going to happen. So at 8:05 in the morning, I'm not going to mark my ball and pick it up and say, okay, who wants me? Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't know where I'm going. So if 8:05, somebody knows where they're already going, they've done some work, or somebody's done some work behind the scene. This is the part that really bugs me. I don't like it, not a fan. I don't know why it exists, but I guess it's part of where we're living, right? So I was going to read something to you guys. This kind of got me. I told you recently we talked about this and, you know, this would be a great idea for a podcast. Well, I was actually talking to a young assistant coach about a month ago, and he was lamenting the fact that his player was leaving their school and going to another school. And he had told me that some of these things that we know happened that weren't legal and we're just trying to figure out how to prove it or whatever. And I just told him, I said, you're doing things the right way. Don't worry about it. If you can't prove it, you can't prove it. People that are going to do this are going to do this. But I told him, and I won't tell you who he is, but I said, thanks for the chat. I hope you know I actually have a very positive view, because when he finished the phone call, it sounded like gloom and doom for the future of college golf. I didn't mean that. But I said, I actually have a positive view of where I think college golf will land. I don't think this recent trend will continue, because good people, I mean really good people, are still the majority in our profession. One day you'll be running your own program, and I know you'll be successful there because you do it the right way. Never stop doing things the right way. Do them just as you're doing now. Good will eventually win out in 1,000 different ways. And he texted me back. He thanked me. It's like, thank you so much. I agree with you. But the reason we brought this up is because the modern golf coach is having to deal with this. It's part of the deal. Whether you're having to deal with whether or not I should do it or not, do I need to go into that dark, the back alley and, mm-hmm. and do this illegal thing, or do I need to be a victim of it, or do I need to stand back? I contend if I know somebody has done that to me, I'm confronting them. Mm-hmm. And we're going to turn this thing in, because this is not the way we're supposed to do it. And I'm going to give one more analogy.
Let's hear it.
Okay, here we go. So this, if you go in and tamper on another team, it's blatant cheating, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Now, let's say you're still a good player and you're coaching a college golf team and you're going to go to the U.S. Open qualifying. So you spend a little bit of this time actually practicing with your guys and maybe playing golf with them, trying to get your game in shape, because you're going to have to post a score in the U.S. Open qualifying. Mm-hmm. What percentage of the coaches who actually participate in this transfer portal in an inappropriate way, what percentage of those coaches would cheat in that U.S. Open qualifying?
I hope if they've been in the game long enough that none of them would cheat in the qualifier.
It's a very low percentage.
Right.
And the reason it's a low percentage is what? Do you ever get rid of cheating in college, in competitive golf?
In competitive golf, you don't.
You don't.
You can't.
It's a stain that you just can't get off.
Stays with you forever, doesn't it? So my question is how do they reconcile this in their own mind? They'd never cheat in golf because you just can't get away with that. One's done. You're finished. There's a few examples on the PGA Tour or Champions Tour of guys that got caught cheating, and it's just stayed with them forever. And I mean, it just doesn't leave you. But they won't do that. That's a rare, rare, rare thing. But why would a college golf coach cheat in recruiting? He rationalizes with himself. It's like, oh, well, when I get him here, I'll make it right. Mm-hmm. We'll do all the right things once he's here. I just got to get him here. How bad do I need to win? How bad do I need to be good? Bad enough to cheat? And that's the first interaction I have with this kid. Mm-hmm. And this is, I'm showing him who I am and what I am. On the very first day.
Cards are on the table at that point.
I don't know. Obviously, I'm not sitting here saying I'm a perfect person. You guys sitting across from me are not. We all make mistakes. Mm-hmm. But this part of the modern day college golf coach, like this podcast is about the modern day, who we really are. We're having to deal with that. And some are, you know, it's like some are victims of it, and it's too bad. But anyway, so, all right, now that's the gloom and doom. And I read that text that I sent that young assistant coach. It's okay. We've got mostly a vast majority of college golf coaches will not do this.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, I think, I don't know, I'll go on a little rant here just along those lines. I do think we have an unbelievable group of coaches, more and more coaches coming in all the time, young, energized, passionate, and getting into coaching for really good reasons. And since we're on this podcast, I mean, I think, you know, as these opportunities and situations pop up, I truly do believe, like, you know, we're going down a path of college golf, lots of change, college athletics, lots of change. And, you know, when we are no longer coaching, where are we leaving this sport? You know, are we leaving it, as the podcast says, better than we found it? Or are we sending it into, you know, unfortunately, like, what a college basketball, the NCAA, looks like, which kind of gets, you know, gets a bad rap, but it's there's a lot going on there. You got one and done, you got NIL, and I don't personally want college golf to look like that.
It's a great point.
Well, you did bring up a good point. And the modern day college golf coach, let's just kind of meander. Let's get away from that controversial part that I brought up. Sorry I got us in the dark place, but it is real. But you mentioned it. We have really great people getting in the game today.
We do.
I mean, great people. It's like the young coaches that I've mentored or been around or talked to that reach out to me, it's like, man, we got a lot of great guys getting in this. Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago, I hosted a College Golf Fellowship Young Coaches Retreat, and we had, I think it was 14 24 to 28 year old coaches at our house for Bible studies, and we did a bunch of coaching clinic on that as well. And I was thinking to myself, if this is the future of college golf, it's pretty good place. Mm-hmm. It's really good place. You guys were hired under that same filter this summer. I mean, that's why I hired you guys, because of the character, because of who you are as people. And you all also happen to be good players that know what you're talking about. So it's like, you know, if I can get both of those, but I can forego and bypass the good player part. I can't the other. Mm-hmm. It's like, I want great people in our profession. I wrote that book 6 or 7 years ago called Better Than I Found It, which is the name of this podcast, but it's truly what my goal is. It's truly my goal. I want to leave this space better than it was when I got here, mm-hmm. whether it's college golf or Baylor University or Johnny Key for the human being on my team. Mm-hmm. I want to leave him better, or Luke Dossie or whomever. It's like, that's pretty simple. Well, what's the best way to do that? It's to hire good people, to have good people around you. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate you saying that, because I think we've got great young coaches in the game. Corey, you are one of those. Talk about your generation of coaches from 24 to 30 years of age. because that's your generation.
Yeah, I'm definitely young. Just turned 27 about three weeks ago. So a little fresh to everything, I guess. Enthusiastic every time I come to work. It's great working with you guys. Excited to just jump on any task I can. But I do feel like I know a lot of young coaches in the college golf world that kind of the same path as me, you know, played college golf, tried to play for a little bit after college, realized if you can't do, teach. So I'll get into coaching, and I think it's going to be headed into a good spot, at least from my point of view.
Yeah, I agree with you. Jeremy, you're a little bit older, but not much. I mean, you're 8 or 9 or 10 years older. I mean, you're in that next generation, just younger or older than him. And you know of a bunch of great coaches in your area, age-wise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think, you know, I've got a lot of friends that got into it. And the exciting part is, you know, they got into it for the right reasons. And that's continuing to be what our sport is getting. You know, back in the day, it looked a little different, and a lot of good coaches came from that. But, you know, it seems like there's more playing ability, there's more experience from an overall golf ability, and I think that just betters the current student athletes and what they're getting on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I agree with both of you guys. I mean, the quality of young coaches today way out, far exceeds the quality of young coaches when I was coming up, or even when I was playing, certainly. But even when I first got in college coaching, there weren't that many great young coaches. But now a lot of them are getting into the partially because it's so hard to become a player.
It's
and
very
they,
hard.
They still want to be involved with the game. It is not easy. Anybody who's playing the game for a living, a huge amount of respect that they can stay out there and do it. It's amazing. But I was going to talk about another difference between the modern day coach and a coach in my day. You gave the coach respect, period, because he was the coach. It was mm-hmm. positional power the coach had over you. He was the coach, and you respected everything he said. You didn't question anything he said. Well, that's not the way it is today. And it is, and it can't be. But the truth is, these kids come in a lot more sophisticated than they used to be. As a coaching profession, we'd better be way more sophisticated than we were 30, 35, 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. So
how's that my way or the highway going to go these days with the transfer portal?
That transfer portal, he's down the highway. No, the truth, the my way or the highway doesn't exist anymore. It's not there. In fact, I was going to, if I can meander to a story, what?
We've got to keep a lot of people happy.
We do have to keep a lot of people happy. You got to keep me happy so I don't run you off too.
Exactly.
So Mike Holder, who I worked for at Oklahoma State for 16 years, was 8 years as his assistant coach, basically, and then 8 years as the head golf coach when he was the athletic director. He was an old school coach. Anybody that knows the history of college golf knows he was an old school coach, sort of in the ilk of Vince Lombardi or Bear Bryant. It was old school. He was an old school, kick them in the teeth, and if they survive, then they're going to be a better player. Well, we obviously know we can't do that anymore. It's like the modern coach has to message everything differently. We're still trying to teach the same. Do you think you want to teach a bunch of different ethics, morals, and values that Bear Bryant did, or you think you want to teach basically hard work is valuable?
Yeah, I think the similarities would be there.
Yeah, it's still there. It's not like all of a sudden we created a bunch of new things that, okay, these are the morals or ethics or values that are important today. No, they've always been around, but the messaging was different in Bear Bryant's day. Yeah, he told you how the cow ate the cabbage. You didn't ask him why the cow ate the cabbage that way. You just, that's the way it was. But, and on that line, I want to say a story that I've never told before, but we were at the Jerry Pate in Birmingham, Alabama, and I was the assistant coach to Mike Holder at the time, and only one coach could coach at a time. And he said, McGraw, this week I want you following me. I want you to listen to everything I say to the players. And I thought, that's a great idea. You know, normally he has me go watch another player or something, but in this case, I'll literally hear everything he's saying to the players. Well, we got around, he's following Anders Holtmann, who ended up being a first-team All-American. But Anders finished the turn, and Mike and I stopped to get a sandwich. And by the time we got to 10-tee, Anders had already hit his tee ball and was down the fairway. So we were going to have to catch up. And so we're about 100 yards behind him. He hit, or 200 yards behind him. He hits the iron shot left of the green. Okay, and so we're just still sauntering our way up the fairway. And Anders doesn't see us. And so he's down way left and below the green on the 10th hole at Old Overton. And he chili dips one, goes up the hill, comes back to his feet. Chili dips one, goes up the hill, comes back to his feet. Chili dips a third one, comes back to his feet. The fourth one he hits right in the belly, bullets it right over the green, probably 30 yards over the green. And all of a sudden we hear this violent scream from down in the trees, and it's Anders. And then we saw his sand wedge flying through the air end over end. And so I'm thinking, okay. I wondered when I was going to witness a death. This is it. And Mike is, he's dropped his sandwich and he is walking that direction. He is, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, I can't even be near this. I don't know what to do. Because I knew all the stories about Mike being tough on kids. And here a kid has lost his complete composure and thrown a wedge, you know, 30 yards in the air. And so I'm going to stay back. I don't even want to be near this carnage. And so I'm 150 yards away, and next thing I know, Mike is right up in Anders' face. Nothing happens for about 5 seconds, about 10 seconds. And then all of a sudden, Mike put his arm around Anders. They walk up the hill. Anders gets it up and down for a triple or whatever, and they move on to the next tee. And I thought, man, I need to go get nearer this. Whatever happened there was different. That's not what I expected. But by the time they got to the 11th tee, they were getting ready to hit the tee shot. They talked through every shot the entire back nine. Anders shot 2 under par on the last 8 holes. The next day he shot 67. Six months later he was an All-American. So anyway, that's how it proceeded, and that's skipping a lot of information. But I asked Mike that night in the hotel room, Mike, what did you and Anders talk about on the left of the 10th green? I wasn't there. I didn't get up there. And he said, would you mind telling me what you told him? He said, no, I don't mind telling you. He said, when I left you and I was headed down to Anders, all I could think about was putting my hands around, and I was gonna give it to him with both barrels and just ream him, just scream at him and yell at him. And by the time I'd gotten to him, it occurred to me, this kid's losing his composure on a golf course, and it was his Achilles heel. Anders would always lose his composure on a golf course. He thought to himself, how in the world is screaming and yelling at him going to help him learn that screaming and yelling doesn't work? Mm-hmm. And it was the first time it ever occurred to me that that was the case. And I walked down there. I said, Anders, do you know what I'm going to do to you right now? And Anders, completely flustered, said, no, sir, I don't. He said, I'm going to put my arm around you. And you and I are going to walk this back nine, and we're going to shoot under par in this back nine, you and me together. And tomorrow you're going to play a great final round, and this will all be a distant memory. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened. And Anders became a 2-time All-American at Oklahoma State. And to me, the beauty of that was, one, an old-school, tough, rugged, mean coach sort of all of a sudden figured out that's not the way you get results with a modern-day kid. Mm-hmm. And it really probably wasn't good all along. But the other thing was being humble enough to actually change your whole point of view in that moment. Mm-hmm. When he realized this isn't working and none of this discipline that I've shown him has worked, it's just probably driven him further the other direction. I'll never forget that moment. Mike taught me a lot in that moment. It was, one, you're never too old to change something that could make you a better coach. Mm-hmm. But number two, this kid needed something different. Mm-hmm. And Mike Holder finally gave him what he needed, and Anders became an All-American. Anders, when I asked him about that, he remembered it exactly as I remembered it, only he probably had more beads of sweat rolling down than I did.
That's some good coaching.
But do you see where I'm going with that? And Mike wouldn't have messaged it that way in the early years of his career. This was sort of late. He had about 3 or 4 more years to coach, and he'd come to the point where he realized, you know what? That's not the way you help a kid out. And Anders benefited greatly because Mike used he constrained himself. He actually used some restraint. And actually, that was amazing. We have to message things differently to kids nowadays. Don't you agree?
Yeah. I mean, I think I love that story. I think
I'd never told you that one before.
No, that's an unbelievable job of kind of adapting. But, you know, I think as we grow in our relationships with the coaches or with the players, and coaching them, I think that speaks to a huge emphasis on, you know, if we have to meet guys where they are these days. It's not a, I'm up here on this high horse speaking down and getting a yes, sir. It's a, you know, you meet them where they are and go through the things that they're going through with them. You know, it's not any different than putting your arm around and say, hey, we're going every shot on this back nine together. And that's what a lot of these guys want. They want to know the why of what we're making them do, and then they want to know that you're going to do it with them.
Mm-hmm.
And that to them, I think that's what they see as support and coaching nowadays.
You played for two wonderful coaches. Tell me how they would have messaged that. Similar?
Very similar. I think, I mean, what Jerm said is just spot on. We're coaches, but we're not these, you know, icons like, oh, he's the principal, he's the man that lays down the law. No, we're friends at the end of the day with players. We just wear a lot of different hats. I think we're going to talk about that some later, but we're not just sheriff, commander out here. We want to have relationships with these guys and want to help them get better. And they spend so much time away from their family that we typically are sometimes as close as family. I mean, I know our guys on the team here basically live at the facility. You've got to send them home sometimes to mm-hmm. get some schoolwork done. So I think we're more than just a positional power now. We are friend, mentor, and just walking along life with them.
I love it. You know, I look back at that story and I think, I didn't mention this, but it actually impacted my career in a big way. I probably never would have reacted the way Mike was feeling he was going to react going down there. I never would have gotten to that point. He caught himself that day. But that impacted my career in the sense that I realized it's really important how you speak to a kid. Mm. And if you make it personal, and if you actually tear into them and make it personal, it's hard to overcome that in your relationship. You probably lose them for the whole season, for sure, mm-hmm. but you potentially lose them for a career, and you don't want that to happen. I mean, ultimately, the kid didn't mean to throw that wedge 50 yards in the air. He completely lost his composure, and he had never really been shown how
to handle that.
And Mike, always before, the discipline had been there where we'd put him on a Stairmaster for an hour, or we'd do whatever we could to try to make it miserable for him. Mm-hmm. That wasn't working. And finally, it worked. Put his arm around him and said, listen, I want to help you get this figured out. You and me together, let's go do this. And Honor said, yeah, that was a big, big moment in his life. He never forgot that. So, guys, you mentioned it just now, Corey. You said something about hats being worn. That's kind of what I wanted to get to into this podcast anyway, because people, the hats that the casual college golf fan thinks we wear is one.
We just go play golf.
So there's a golf playing hat. There's the gear receiving hat. Mm-hmm. And there's the
travel,
to go see the world hat. Mm-hmm. There's, there's no real stress hats. This is perfect.
You got to drive the van
just,
there.
Yeah, just get them
go
there.
Do their
okay.
thing.
It's a little different. So let's talk about, let's just go through and I'll talk about one, then you give me one, and then you give me one, Jeremy. Okay, here we go. I'm going to say one hat that most casual golf fans don't know about is the fundraiser hat. So we're not exactly in a sport that produces ticket revenue, T-shirt sales, Coca-Cola sales at the concession stand. It's not like that in golf. So what we do is we have a sport where pretty much all of the funds are outgoing, right? We spend money for travel. We spend money for hotels. We spend money for equipment. We spend money for all of those things. So as a coach in a college, especially a Power 5 conference, and actually the smaller schools, they have to possibly raise their own salary or raise the team mm-hmm. travel budget or whatever. I think people forget we have to go out and raise money. Correct?
Correct. And I know you know this, but, I mean, how much time does it take to make phone calls and write letters and meet with guys for lunch? I know the fundraising part, it's instrumental in our programs, but man, it takes up a ton of your time. I mean, it has to.
It does, but I'm sitting in a facility right here that donors built, and I'm thankful. I'll always be thankful. And Jay Goble and I know that donors stepped up to the plate and built a wonderful facility here so our student athletes could be near their apartments and be able to practice. So it's one that people don't think about, but it's one that's very, very real. Okay. Corey, you have one?
Yeah. What, one is a psychologist. You know, you're helping them with anything that goes wrong, poor test grade, flat tire, you got a bad few qualifying rounds. You're just a mental coach through and through. Did you know you're a Dr. McGraw?
Yeah, I feel it sometimes because the truth, they're going through the hardest part of life that they've ever been through because they're away from home for the first time. Mm-hmm. So they have a lot of challenges. They don't know what's going on. I think we are psychologists, amateur counselors, but we've been in the trenches figuring it out. Your PhD 30 years from now will be in counseling, I promise you.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah. Jeremy, do you have any more?
You know, I think we're mentors and friends to them. You know, they, along those same lines of, you know, psychologist counseling, as you talk through all these things that 18 to 22-year-olds go through, you know, they're at a point in life where they're trying to figure out things. They're trying to figure out what direction they're going to go, you know, whether that's with girlfriends, with golf, with academics, with their faith. And, you know, we're trying to help them in all these different directions, and we are unable to do that if we are not friends with them and build relationships with them and try to show some of our experience and pass that along to them. So, yeah, I think that's a huge piece of a modern-day coach.
I think, and you didn't think about it back in the day, way, way back when.
Oh, no.
And you probably had a grade school baseball coach that was mentoring, but nobody talked about
right.
it. But nowadays, I mean, it's part of your job. Mm-hmm. I think you have to mentor. You have to at least understand their feelings, their emotions, what they're going through. It's pretty important, sort of along that psychologist. I know one other thing that didn't exist when I was playing college golf. It did, but it didn't. We didn't have swing gurus in those days. You know, the swing golf swing instruction was not an industry. You know, it wasn't an industry. Now it is. But in those days, the coach did have positional power. He was your swing coach when you went to college. Mm-hmm. And nowadays, we're not so much a swing coach, but we need to be the eyes for the swing coach. So, I mean, I don't know anybody who – there's very few. Chuck Winstead is a wonderful instructor. Mm-hmm. He teaches the game, but he's also a college golf coach at LSU. But not many. Most of the college golf coaches leave the swing instruction to the guys who that are teaching the kids as they're growing up. Mm-hmm. And you have to have respect, a little bit of respect for those swing coaches, at least because they got them to your campus, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they got them to, so I think swing coaches, even though we don't do a ton of swing coaching or technique work, we are an extra set of eyes for those swing coaches themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd like to kind of dive into it. Like,
yep.
We need to be instrumental in that relationship because, you know, those coaches, those swing coaches, they obviously got them there, and then now they're in a position where they're unable to work with them probably as much as they would like or as much as they were. So we kind of end up being the middleman to keep our eyes on that. And that's a lot of times with tendencies. And, you know, we're professional golf watchers. That's what we do. We watch a lot of golf. And so we're able to pick up on the day-to-day. And I think the healthy way to do that is to pass that along to the player and the coach, and if, as long as we know that we are a middleman to help both of those relationships, we're in a good spot. We can't be a barrier to those relationships.
I think that's wonderful. That kind of helps the player own his game and know what he needs to do day in, day out. I think another one that people don't think, they might think about it but don't really understand what it takes, the team travel agent. You're booking flights, you're booking hotels, you're booking rental cars, you're planning out your fall and spring schedule, but while doing that, you're also planning out your recruiting schedule during the summer. So all the miles, hours in a plane, hours in a car, it adds up, and you got to keep track of that.
Absolutely. And By the way, this summer when I was an assistant coach, you guys don't understand. I hired you. I'm really glad you got here, but I'm really glad you got here because I was tired of being the travel agent. So, Jeremy, you got any others?
Yeah, and, you know, fitness and nutrition is probably a lot more popular and I'd say important than it was, you know, years ago. I think Tiger was instrumental in raising that awareness, but I mean, our game has evolved so much. If you aren't taking care of the fitness side of things and pushing yourself to, you know, to up your ball speed and up your endurance and ability to recover and all of that, like there's so much to it. If you're not doing that, you're letting other guys get ahead of you. And so, you know, we have to tackle some of that. We have, you know, we're fortunate here to have Izzy, and she's great. And we're able to work side by side with her to push our guys in those two departments. But I think that's as an important, honestly, as different parts of practicing. I mean, I think, what am I going to go work on today? I'm going to go work on some putting, some chipping, some swing mechanics. Well, you also better go work on your nutrition and your fitness, your mobility. Because that's something that has to get pushed along with the rest of the game.
Yeah, when you're standing over 5-footers on the putting green for an hour and a half, you probably should go get some back work done with a trainer eventually.
You know, I was thinking about these hats worn, and you guys, you comedians, both of you, because they wrote, podcast listeners, they wrote on my sheet of paper here, they wrote, you have to be a podcast facilitator and a Zoom coordinator. And the truth is, yes, at Baylor you do, because this podcast is not going to end anytime soon, I hope.
Yeah, I don't know if me and Jeremy saw that on our list of jobs.
Okay. You're free to get in the coach's transfer portal if you like. That's all yours. You ain't leaving, I know. Okay, so one other thing before we end, and by the way, none of this was meant to say, woe is me. This is just the modern-day college golf coach. I'm just trying to present what it looks. Our challenges are different. Our expectations are different. Our opportunities are better than they were 40 years ago. There's so many more opportunities. So this is all about, yeah, I love the profession. If I didn't love it, I'd be out.
Yeah.
I think you guys see on a daily basis, I probably have as much energy as a lot of 25 or 30-year-olds because I'm excited about this. I love what we do. But I also know that it's important. That's one of the reasons you try to hire a young assistant coach is because they're not going to allow me to get into patterns. Most people my age, and I watched a lot of coaches in the last 30 years that got into their 60s, and it's real easy to get in patterns. This is the way I've always done it. This is the way I'm always going to do it. And you people are just going to sit back and watch it because that's what I've always done. I don't want to be in patterns. So if you guys see something that I'm doing that you don't like or you don't understand, talk to me about it. And that's something a coach wouldn't have done 40 years ago.
Right.
Because it's like, I'm the coach.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need any assistant coach telling me how it's done. Mm-hmm. I need an assistant coach to tell me, hey, this is a good idea. Let's do this. The practice that you guys designed this past Monday, phenomenal. And I had two kids on the team come up and say, that was a great practice. Mm-hmm. So I didn't design that. You guys did. So it's like, I need to be prodded along the line of don't get in a pattern, coach. Some of the things are great, but maybe we could do something differently. So I like that. Okay, but the last thing I'd like to talk about is something that is a little bit bothersome to us. So I call it layers and layers and layers. So it's like the NCAA, the conference, the school, and that's for everybody, NCAA, their conference, their school. It seems like layers upon layers upon layers of things have been added, paperwork, computer work, a lot of it kind of busy work, a lot of it just checking off a box, a lot of it just covering our you-know-what. It's like, why do we do that? It's like those things don't really provide value, but they're necessary in the modern day. They're a necessary part of our job. Now, are you guys with me on this? You can blow it right out of the water or what, but it's like we've got a lot of that, more than most people would think.
Coach McGraw really loves the meetings and the Zoom stuff that he gets tied to all the time. But no, I mean, there's no other way around it. Like, there's a lot of check boxes. and we need to be in compliance of all that. But yeah, it does. It's exhausting at times. It adds up, and you know, unfortunately, it takes away from time with the kids, but that's just kind of part of it. I don't think that existed years ago.
No, and I was gonna make the point before you say something, Corey. Is it's probably a little harder in my generation too, because we didn't have computers from day one.
Right.
So we're having to figure out, like, how do I do this form? I don't understand this. And you guys do a little bit better than we would. But you were going to say something, Corey.
Yeah, I agree. It is a lot of work. But from my point of view, it's somewhat all I know. I've only been doing this for a short period of time. So I don't know much of anything different. But I do like how we, as a coaching staff, we kind of have the motto is we're not going to have a meeting unless – What do you like to say, Coach?
Well, it better provide value. I mean, honestly, we all have to sit through meetings. Everybody does in every part, whether it's in the business office or compliance or the golf coaching staff. We all have to sit through meetings. That's part of the deal. But if I'm going to have a meeting for our team, it's going to have some kind of meaning. There's going to be something there that they're going to get something out of, because they don't want to be in that meeting. So I want them to understand when they come to a meeting, it means something. Mm-hmm. And I'm not griping or moaning or whining. Remember, I love my job. It's part of the modern day coach. There are more layers now of paperwork and computer work that you must do before you can ever get to the coaching part of it.
Yeah.
And I think we've hit on about five or six areas here of college coaching. Were you going to say something, Corey?
Yeah, I think this is just a strictly informational about hour-long talk or so, just us kind of relaying what we do day in, day out, what we deal with day in, day out. I definitely love my job. I get to be around guys chasing their dreams, their passions, learning under both of y'all. So I'm glad to be a Baylor, glad to be a college golf coach, and Lord willing, we'll be a coach for a while.
You know, we had a podcast guest just yesterday, and I don't want to say who it was because it'll spoil the surprise. But one of the things he talked about, and he's a player on the PGA Tour, was the gratitude that he feels that he gets to do that. He gets to play the game of golf for a living, and he loves it. And I think the same thing. I've been coaching now 36 years. You've been coaching, Jeremy?
This is year 10.
10. You've been coaching 3. Yeah. So we're all at different stages of our respective coaching careers, but we all love what we're doing. You wouldn't be doing this if you didn't love it. We all love this. What I wanted this podcast to be is what Corey just said, informational, to let the average golf fan know it's a little bit different deal than you might think. Oh, but I will say we do get to go to Cabo, or we will get to go to Hawaii. We're going to go to some nice places this year. There's no doubt about it. And we're going to compete against the best teams in the country. I'm thrilled that I get to do that. But I'm also thrilled that I get to – we just had Davis Ovard, a new freshman, walk into the office a minute ago before we started this podcast, was telling me, you know, he had such and such, or his he couldn't get access to the building because his thumbprint wasn't working. That's pretty meat and potatoes. That's part of the job. So we're going to have to make sure that his thumbprint will work to get him in the building.
Another hat is IT.
Yeah, another hat. No, and by the way, I never wear the IT hat, ever. But, no, guys, I appreciate you sitting down for about an hour here just to kind of give the casual, better than I found it, golf fan, just a better idea of what college coaches do every day. We love what we're doing. We're going to keep on doing it as long as they'll let us. So thanks for joining me again today, guys.
Thanks, Coach.
Stick 'em.
Stick 'em, Bears. You bet.